we on? Welcome to the March 14th Valentine's meeting of the Senate Business Transportation and Economic Development Committee. First up on our agenda is introduction of committee measures, and I believe we have two. For the benefit of the audience, I will explain that for those who aren't here every day, it's a courtesy to introduce bills to get them into the process. It doesn't commit the members to vote one way or another on the bill. It's just simply getting them into the process. So the two bills we have are Legislative Council Draft 3423 and 3464. The chair would move introduction to these bills. Is there any objections of the committee? Seeing none, 3423 and 3464 are introduced, submitted for introduction. First bill up for public hearing is Senate Bill 618. I'll open a work session. Richard?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 618 allows the Travel Information Council to issue tourist-oriented directional sign permits to community service organizations and religious institutions. It prohibits the council from requiring businesses, religious institutions, or community service organizations to have restrooms or drinking water for the public, or to maintain a minimum number of operating hours to qualify for tourist-oriented directional sign permit.
Thank you. Our first witness will be Senator Boquist. Come and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Brian Boquist, Senate District 12. I cover rural portions of six counties. I have no idea what I'll cover in 2 years, but it's a good game out there. Having said that, 2 years ago, I introduced Senate Bill 927, and you're going to have a panel of three people coming up here shortly to talk about 927, which, of course, is now 618. And when you send things down to Legislative Council and they draft, you always wonder how they come back. But, you know, it came back twice the same way, so it's like, okay, this is what we'll go with. The issue, Mr. Chairman, really, I mean, it looks, if you just read it real quick in the black lines, and on the first page it says, you know, we're going to have business, religious institutions, and community services to signage. What the real issue that came up from cities and counties was is that given the economic times that we're in 2 years ago and that we're in now, we have community service organizations that are out there that provide soup kitchens, that provide community events, that provide homeless shelters, and likewise we have religious institutions, if that's what you want to call it, that provide the same types of services out in our communities. Unfortunately, as we've gotten bigger and urbanized, not everybody knows. The way the original signage laws went out there is we got to wear the billboards and we're going to make small signs. And, of course, you don't want billboards in the downtown areas. So now we're in a position where we have larger communities, and not everybody knows where these organizations are at. I'd like to say that we had a government food bank on every corner and a government community center every place, and that we had government homeless centers, but the fact of the matter is we don't. And what we're trying to address with this bill is come up with a signage issue that meets the Oregon requirement of not being a huge billboard, but can provide members of the community and members of the county locations of where some of these service organizations are at, so they can go and seek help. And with that, Mr. President, again, I haven't quite got an idea where LC came up with the bathroom issue, but what can I tell you? I'm sure that one of the smart legal wiggles that's going to come up behind me here can tell you it has something to do with the federal law, and some of the long-term members on transportation will tell you somewhere buried in the federal code says, I guess if you put up a sign, you have to have a bathroom. But that's beyond my capability, and I see the nodding there, so they can kind of educate it. That's where we're going. I think an agreement might have been reached that helps move this along, maybe not even in the bill form, but there's a panel of three coming up, Mr. Chairman and fellow senators, that will address that issue. And I'd be happy to entertain your questions, except the bathroom one, because I don't know how to answer that one.
A question for Senator Boquist. Thank you, Senator. So I have three people. Mr. Campbell, Mr. Gibsko, and Ms. George, you all want to come up together? Cool. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Travel Information Council. The bill that you have before you does have some conflicts with the federal language. This is a federal program for tourist-oriented directional signs. And where the problem comes in the existing bill is it asks for a specific type of sign to be allowable that wouldn't meet the federal definition that allows that organization or that facility to be registered for a tourist-oriented directional sign. The reason for that is the federal government, when they created this sign program, had tourism in mind, and when they did so, they decided that it had to be a facility or service that gained its revenue or a majority of its revenue or its visitors from those that are from outside of the area where that facility exists. So for most of your service-oriented organizations, most of your churches, it just isn't going to be the case unless they happen to be a registered tourist-related historical church or something along those lines. That being said, that doesn't mean that we're without a solution. It just means the solution doesn't come from adjusting the law that deals with these tourist-oriented direction signs. And I have with me the Executive Director of the Travel Information Council, Cheryl Gribsko, and Commissioner Kathy George, who have had some discussions about a way around this. And maybe now would be a good time for me to pull my mouth away from the microphone and let those two tell you what they've been discussing.
Craig, before you do, does this only apply to the interstate, or does it apply to the federal highways as well?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is it deals with any state highway. And
state highway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's to do with the blue signs anywhere.
Go ahead, please.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Gribsko. I'm the CEO of the Travel Information Council. And we're very excited about this because it's opened up some ideas that may take some fruition this year. I talked to Commissioner George on Friday. We both agree that tourist-oriented directional signs don't really fill the bill here. And what we can do, though, is sit with ODOT people and see if we can come up with a solution that's going to work for all of us. And so that is the conversation that I had with Commissioner George, and I'm very excited about where we might be able to go with this, and we're absolutely 100% committed to that solution.
Thank you, and Chair Beyer and committee members. This first came to my attention in Yamhill County.
I'm Kathy George,
County Commissioner in Yamhill County. And this issue came before me about 4 years ago when a church in our community had built their building, a new building, slightly off the main highway. And they have events and they have reasons for people to want to be able to find them. And they thought it would be very easy, given the large number of signs that advertised wineries, that it would be easy to get a sign that pointed off the highway to their building. And they came up against a brick wall that it wasn't possible. And so I started looking into it and found it's a lot more complex than what I would have thought. But it seems only fair that organizations, nonprofits, community groups, and church and religious institutions who all pay for these signs, all of these tourist signs and all the people who want signs advertising their positions, pay for their own signs and the upkeep of them. We're not asking support, financial support. But it seemed fair that some of these organizations, for example, there's many churches in our community who have soup kitchens. There are many who hold youth events. There are many organizations in our community, like our Yamhill County Poverty Association, YCAP, who does have a food bank and a different counseling places, and they need to have people to know where they are. And so, and even veterans organizations sometimes have to have signs that point to where they are. So, because some of the highways and roads going through our communities are state highways, if we don't have permission to have some sort of sign, then people who aren't totally familiar with the service or with the facility can't find them. And like Cheryl mentioned, a lot of people, as our communities grow larger, they may not have been aware in the past of where these facilities might be. And so I would ask your help in helping us to find some sort of solution to this that is that is fair to all, and it doesn't limit it, our signs along our highways to only being wineries and specific tourist events, tourist facilities. So thank you so much for your patience and for your help.
I'll throw it back to Cheryl and Craig. I inferred from your comments that there was some agreement to work with ODOT, although I don't see ODOT at the table.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, they're in the room, and Cheryl is having ongoing discussions with them. And there's one other thing I should comment about the bill, because there are really two elements to the bill. And those signs are blue signs, and they really are targeted at tourism. And when you see a blue sign that has a directional arrow to it, it's also telling you this is a place where you can go if you need to find a restroom or water. And that's been built into the blue signs, whether they're the signs you see on the freeway that has food, lodging, gas, or whether it's one of these directional signs. So that's something that it's a signal to anyone who's traveling that you can find what you need there. And if you change that, it dilutes what those blue signs were really intended for. That really doesn't deal with the issue that Commissioner George was talking about, but it's found its way into the bill, and it's another reason why Travel Information Council is opposed to the bill. The agreement that has been discussed is that we will work with the Department of Transportation to find some alternative way of creating a sign program specifically for community-oriented services. And we'll either, whether it requires coming back for legislation or it's something that can just be instituted by those agencies, we'll figure out and get back to you on.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
Some people would argue against this, Mr. Campbell. Find what you need there is the blue sign is typically how members of a church would feel about their church. But I have a theological question. Is there any problems putting a winery and a church on the same blue sign?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, in fact, if it is a travel, a tourism-oriented sign, yes. And let me read to you the federal language. A facility shall be eligible for tourist-oriented directional signs only if it derives its major portion of income or visitors during the normal business season from road users not residing in the area of the facility, which is why you can't put a church on a blue sign unless somehow it happens to meet that definition. If it does, it's probably a historic site and would be eligible.
Read that again.
A facility shall be eligible for tourist-oriented directional signs only if it derives its major portion of income or visitors during the normal business season from road users not residing in the area of the facility.
I'm glad you added the or visitors. Okay.
Great.
Others? Okay, thank you very much. Any additional comments?
Based on the definition and the rules under which we're following, if a Lutheran church happened to have a place in it that had a winery that was open the right amount of hours and it served the visitors, it would qualify for that. And if they named it St. John's Lutheran Church Winery, then
they'd have
that
a lot
would
of
do
parishioners.
And I want to thank you all for considering this.
So what I'm hearing you, just to be clear, what I'm hearing you saying is you want us to set this one aside and allow you to work on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. ODOT, you're shaking your head. You're going to work on the issue. Okay. All righty. I should ask, is there anybody else who wishes to speak to us on this issue? I don't have any additional sign-ups. Okay. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 618, and we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 179.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 179. Authorizes the Travel Information Council to issue citations for violations of health and safety rules at roadside rest areas managed by the council. On your staff manager summary, I noted there was no revenue impact, and at the time I didn't have the fiscal, but I have received that since, and it came back minimal expenditure impact.
Okay, and I see that Cheryl and Craig are the signees on this one, too, so come on up. You want to come up together or separate?
It's like a hall monitor bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here again on behalf of Travel Information Council. Senate Bill 179 carries on the work that was done in House Bill 2001 that transferred management responsibility by interagency agreement with ODOT to manage what ended up being 10 rest stops. ODOT maintains the ability to do rulemaking for those rest stops, and this bill would allow the Travel Information Council to have its employees enforce the rules that were adopted by ODOT and provide citations for that. It does not extend that to criminal enforcement, and the program would be identified by the executive director who would identify who within the organization would be eligible, and they're currently in discussion with Parks Department to provide training for those folks because the program is essentially identical to the Parks program that allows for enforcement of administrative rules in rest stops.
Yes, Senator.
The question would be for Craig. Who gets the money from the citation?
General Fund.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can't actually answer that question. It would have to be because they own the facility.
Is it going to go through the court system or?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no. This would be a process where the appeals, you can designate it in however you want. The way it's envisioned is that the executive director of the Travel Information Council would not have direct authority to determine who would get a citation, so that she, in this case, could act as the final arbiter of appeals. And it could go to an appellate process with ODOT if ODOT chose to set one up, but will likely not to because of the cost that would be involved in doing so.
Hmm. So how does it work now, ODOT?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, ODOT doesn't have staff that are on those rest stops, so there isn't anyone really to enforce administrative rules of the rest stops where Travel Information Council manages. I suppose they could designate people to do so, but it doesn't make financial sense for them to do so. Right. We do have a law enforcement, state police in particular, who have entered into agreements with the Travel Information Council and have a history of enforcing laws in the rest areas, and that's the way it's operated since the Travel Information Council took over. We coordinate any sort of enforcement needs specifically with state police, but they, as you might guess, don't like enforcing regulations. They would prefer to just deal with the criminal violations.
Okay. Any other questions?
Senator? Thank you, Chair Meyer. It would seem to me like we'd have to put into the bill a court process that it's going to go through, and who would receive the money from such a fine. I just think you need an amendment to it. Otherwise, you're just kind of a fancy hall monitor with no power. Because if you don't pay, what's going to happen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you can be held in contempt, but then it has to have a criminal procedure in place.
Do you remember how the discussion went with the district attorney's office? But that was only criminal, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'll have to get back to you on that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, this sounds, when we talked earlier today, this sounds similar to how OHSU kind of enforces their parking on their campus. So you might want to talk to them and find out how they manage their situation up there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, we'll do that. We'll also get a hold of State Parks because the system is essentially based upon the same concept as what State Parks currently does.
Any other questions? Is there anybody else would like to address this? Thank you both very much. Well, it sounds like we need to give you a chance to take a look at this, so we'll close the public hearing on this one and wait to hear back from you. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 534.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 534. requires that the independent appraisal of damage to a motor vehicle in cases of a dispute between an insurer and the insured be conducted by a person who has been insured, who has been issued a vehicle appraiser certificate. There's no revenue and no, and there's minimal expenditure impact on this.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Fuller here on behalf of the Oregon Auto Appraisers Association. Excellent bill, but it doesn't actually do what we were hoping it would do. So we're in a process where we're going to be asking for some amendments and hopefully have an opportunity to bring the bill back to you. I can tell you the sort of the direction that we're headed on this. I was rear-ended on September 20th, and my car was totaled, so I have some personal experience with how this bill is going to work out. The insurance company, or the person that hit me, sent an adjuster out, looked at the car. A couple of weeks later, they came back and said, we've just decided that your car is a total loss, and here's what we want to give you for it. And I felt it was inadequate. And so we went back and forth three or four times, asking them to increase the value of the vehicle. And finally, they indicated that they would send out another independent adjuster to look at the vehicle, or independent appraiser to look at my vehicle, to make sure that they weren't off base. And so I scheduled time out of my day. The person came, spent some time with him. What I discovered was that this person was actually the supervisor of the first person. Same firm, same company. There was no independent third-party arm's length. There was nothing about that other than it was somebody else from the same company that they hired the first time. What we're looking for when there's a dispute, we're not telling the insurance companies who they have to hire as their adjusters, but in the policies when there's a dispute about the value of the vehicle, the insurance company says we're going to hire an independent third-party adjuster to come out and look at the vehicle to make sure we're on track. We're trying to find a process by which that person even though the person's still going to be paid for by the insurance company, that somehow that person is not closely connected to the insurance company. We're not sure how we're going to get here there from here. There are also cases where we've discovered that insurance companies will have appraisers that will look at a vehicle that actually never look at the vehicle. They look at the pictures that are sent to them, and they're in a location outside of Oregon, and they actually never see the vehicle itself with the exception of photos. And we're not sure that that's always the best way to appraise the value of a vehicle. So we're going to work with the insurance companies. We're going to try to find something that they can agree to, that we can agree to, that takes the licensing process that the legislative body last session or the session before we started licensing auto appraisers in Oregon for the first time, which was a big step forward and was important because courts were looking for there were times where you couldn't get courts in Oregon to recognize Oregon appraisers because they weren't licensed where other states were. And so we're moving forward, and this is sort of part of that evolution. Trying to find a way to bring more credibility and better standards to the appraisal process, especially when it comes to insurance companies. So hopefully in a few weeks we'll be able to come back with some amendments that move us along that course. Be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Gerard?
Thank you, Chair Maher. Couldn't we just say that you need an independent report and then define what independent would mean? Would that work?
Mr. Chair,
independent appraiser.
Senator Gerard, well, that's kind of where we're getting, and there are, as I understand it, some terms that are used in the insurance industry that are already well-defined that we're trying to incorporate into this. I mean, we're looking at language. Competent and disinterested are a couple of the terms that have been suggested to us that we look at in terms of finding that independent, and apparently the insurance term, and I don't know a lot about the insurance end of it, which is why I'm working with the folks from the insurance company, but disinterested is the word that has an already established meaning in insurance law.
So it's how you would get to one of those and choose it. The dispute over which one you chose?
Well, Mr. Chair, that could be the case because different insurance policies have different provisions. There isn't, or at least in this section of the statute, we're not dealing with a statute that says they have to hire. If you look at the language of the bill in Section 1, it talks about if the insurance policy provides for an independent third-party adjuster, then this is what that looks like. And so we're not suggesting and the statute doesn't say, and we're not suggesting at this point that we're going to require all insurance policies to include this new provision if some of them don't. Okay. That's not necessarily our intent, or at least it doesn't look like that's the direction we're going as far as I can tell.
Other questions? Well, it looks like this one's going
a little amendment as well.
All
so
right.
Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this? And if you needed a request for an amendment, to talk to our Richard about that.
Thank you, and I appreciate your time.
Anybody else? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 534, and we will open on Senate Bill 145.
Thank you.
We're 0 for 3.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 145 allows the Department of Revenue and the Public Utility Commission to share information received while administering the telecommunications tax funding, the 911 emergency reporting systems, and surcharge funding the Residential Service Protection Fund. It alters the definition of, quote, telecommunications relay service to include a broader array of technologies than the voice and teletype systems noted in the current statute. I didn't have this at the time of the SMS, but this has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay.
There is also an amendment that removes video relay services from the list of examples of telecommunication relay services, and the amendment has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay. Mr. Gray. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good thing I didn't call you Commissioner Byer. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Cray, and I'm the Residential Service Protection Fund Manager at the Public Utility Commission. There are two parts to this housekeeping bill. The definition of the telecommunication relay service in existing statute is archaic. We would like to update it to match the Federal Communication Commission definition of telecommunication relay service. Secondly, the 2009 Legislative Assembly approved Senate Bill 300 that allowed the Public Utility Commission and the Department of Revenue to exchange information for the purpose of enforcing compliance among the landline and wireless phone companies with respect to the collection of the Residential Service Protection Fund surcharge and 911 tax. Senate Bill 300 is included in the Department of Revenue statute. We would like to include it in the Public Utility Commission statute for clarity and consistency purposes. There is no known opposition to this housekeeping bill, and we respectfully request your support. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Questions?
One quick question.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. John, does the definitional match only touch the portion of the FCC definitions in telecommunications relay service, or does it go beyond any other FCC definitions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, the definition of the Federal Communication Commission with respect to the telecommunications relay service only incorporates what the Public Utility Commission provides at the state level.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's the only one I have signed up. Is there anybody else? I see we've got a room full of telecom people. No wish to speak, so I assume you're shaking heads, you're in support of this. Well, that was a great signal. All righty, we will close the public hearing and open work session on 145.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 145 to the floor with a...
We got to do that one first.
Mr. Chair, I pull that back, even though it wasn't there, and I'd move the Dash 1 amendments.
Senate Bill 145. Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 145. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. Amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 145 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 145 with the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I'm just talking to myself.
Oh, okay. No opposition? Seeing none, it is adopted. And that takes us to the end of our agenda. Has anybody got anything else?
We need to have a carrier. It needs to be there.
Oh, a carrier! Senator Starr, would you carry this one?
Sure.
Carry
your
Senator
Starr. One note.
Right
now.
So we are adjourned.
What we have is loaded. If it's loaded. Mm-hmm.